All right, so I've got the clicker this morning, so forgive me if I pull a Mike Bartlett and it just doesn't work, because I'm not amazing at this. The video will come in the middle, sorry. I'll cue it in. All right. Anyway, good morning, everyone. How are we? We're okay? Yeah? I might just quickly reshuffle some stuff, if that's all right, because I like to walk around a little bit, as you may know. We're another week close to Christmas. I'm sure most of us are winding things down, right? I know King's finishes pretty early, but most schools are finished now. So we kind of, as a culture, I think, take a big breath, like in and out, don't we? We're like, okay, let's relax, you know, getting closer to Christmas. But as we move close to Christmas, we're going further and further into our Advent series. And yes, today, as we heard before, we're looking at joy. Which I believe is the third word. Jason took us through peace last week, and I think really well. Talked about how, you know, peace is all about waking up to the incoming kingdom of God. And today we're looking at joy. And now, I was actually going to make a lot of jokes about Joy, who's not here this week. He's our worship pastor. But he is actually feeling quite unwell. I don't know if you'd want me to say this, but yeah, if you're a prayer, keep him in your prayers, because I think he's got a bit of an issue. I'll put that one out there. But as we think about joy today, to kick things off, what I want everyone to do is I want you to take a minute now and think of a place, like an actual place, that you've always associated with joy. And then I want a couple of people just to shout out what that place is. So, you know, it might be like a room in your house, or it might be a place you go and meet a friend, or you travel to, retreat to, whatever it is. What's that place, like your happy place? Like, does anyone have any of those? Shout it out. Aldinga Beach. Yeah, that's a good one. Yeah. The beach is always a winner. Yeah. Anybody else? Your grandma's house. Most people pleasant. Your shed? Yeah, okay. Retreat to the shed. I like that. I like that. Yeah. The trampoline. Yeah. That's a good one. There's nothing like that, you know, when you get to the top of the bounce. Oh, so good. So, garden. That's a common one. Yeah. Lots of people, it's like a mental, I don't know how to say it. Yeah. Yeah. It relieves stress. Yeah. Craft room. Yeah. That's another, similar to the shed and the garden, I think, you know. I can't remember who it is. It's somebody in my family. They really like doing the dishes. I don't understand that. I don't understand that. It's like a methodical, it's mindless. Yeah, you know, which, you know, for me, I'll just get a dishwasher. Like, you know, that's, I don't want to do any of that. But I like what Lester said at the beginning, because for me, that place is the beach, right? I love the beach. And usually when I bring up the beach and like talk about it with a lot of my mates, usually I get hit back with the whole like, why do you even like the beach, Abe? Like, sand sucks. You're like shoveling sand out of your car, right? Like, and tipping it out of your shoes. And yes, that is totally true, but that's not why I like going to the beach so much, right? I really like to surf, right? I go to the beach for the waves. There's no doubt. Every time I get in the waves, it's like nothing else matters. It's like the top of that bounce at the trampoline. I don't know, there's just something about it. There's something about the rhythm of the waves just going over you. I don't know, it's just a huge stress reliever for me. It relaxes me and it fills me with joy, right? But, well, I'm getting to that because... So as you can see, this wave, like the ocean could be a pretty scary place, right, at the same time. And I wasn't actually going to talk about sharks too much because, okay, I'll chuck something out there. My argument for why I don't think we should be scared of sharks is that, so 6 people a year worldwide die from sharks, right? 14 people a year die from a vending machine falling on them. And 150 people die because a coconut falls on their head. What's up with that? And even worse, so, and this one really irks me. I'm a left-hander. Anyone a left-hander here? Yeah, come on. Man, there's not many of us. Oh, yeah, Jason, yeah. 500 left-handers will die this year worldwide because they use a product that's intended for a right-hander incorrectly. What does that even mean? That statistic like appalls me, because I'm like, yeah, what are we doing wrong? Or what is the world doing wrong? They're making everything for right-handers. I don't even get it. But now the ocean is a very powerful thing, right? That wave, being actually in that wave, it looks nice now, but being in that, that's a force to be reckoned with right there, all right? I can't tell you how many times, because, you know, the ocean just kind of carries you wherever it wants you to go. Like, you can't just say to the ocean, hey, just stop moving for a second so I can, like, swim this way. No, it's just going to keep doing. I cannot tell you the amount of times I've been dumped by a wave like this. Like, you know, head first sort of thing, especially at Boomers Beach. Anybody been to Boomers Beach? Yeah, that beach is notorious. It's like the waves just kick up and straight down. It's very frustrating. But actually, the most frustrating thing, so I like to surf at Middleton Beach, and it's very long beach, right? Like, it's good because you kind of have two breaks where you got one in the beginning, and that's really good for, you know, bodyboarding and just mucking around with the kids or whatever. But the one at the back is where the real problem. It's such a long way out, and so you have to paddle forever, right? And I hate that, because you paddle for, like, I don't know, 10 minutes to try and get out there, and then a wave crashes on you and just sends you all the way back to the beginning of where you were, right? So it's like, it's maddening. It's like, oh, I spent so long just to be back in the shore again. It's incredibly frustrating. And frankly, most of surfing is just hard, because the ocean is like that. It's just unforgiving. It doesn't care that I'm trying to get out there. It'll just do what it wants to do. So why is the beach a place of joy for me at all? Like, it just sounds like it sucks, right? And sure, like, when I'm paddling out, everything does suck. I get so frustrated when I'm paddling out. Like, luckily enough, you can't really hear anybody else in the ocean. But, like, you know, I'm saying to myself, I hate this. Why am I doing this to myself? Like, I get really frustrated. But every so often, I break through the waves, right? I get to the perfect position. I turn my board around, and I catch one of these waves. I stand up, and instantly I forget all the struggle that it took to get there. I instantly forget it. None of it matters. And when I go home, I don't remember the hour I spent paddling. I just remember the 15 seconds that I caught that wave. I forget the suffering and remember the moment of pure joy. So I choose to go back next week, all to achieve that same moment again and again. But there's a bit of a problem with this, because that moment of, like, elation, of, like, ecstasy, it's like a high point of happiness for me, right? But once that moment is gone, it's gone. It's like no more joy until I can try and achieve it again next week. And I think our lives can be pretty similar to this. You know, moments of pure happiness, of pure joy, but once it's gone, it's gone. It's crazy to think, but there's only 17 days of this decade left. I don't know where the time has gone. Now, if I went around the room and asked every single person, we could probably each identify a moment of, like, real joy that we had in this decade. We could pinpoint, yeah, no, that was a peak moment of the last 10 years of my life. And by the same token, we could probably pinpoint moments where there was a considerable lack of joy, right? So what life is, it's got moments, peak moments, and moments in the valley. Now, for me, this decade's been a big decade, right? I've become an adult this decade, at least I think I have, right? And I became a Christian this decade. I got married this decade. I graduated from high school and then uni this decade. I've traveled around, but on the flip side, you know, I've had a lot of medical issues this decade. I've experienced some relational breakdowns this decade, and more mental breakdowns than I care to admit. But I don't remember much of the specifics of these situations, but I do remember how I felt in each of these moments. Either extremely happy or extremely sad, right? Those are the things that stick out in my mind. But is that, as I reflected, I kind of thought, you know what, is that really what defines my last decade of life? Is that really what defines the last 10 years of my life? My life is just whittled down to a few moments of joy or a few moments without joy. Is that all it really comes down to? Because the thing is, yes, while some of those situations, you know, I did things towards, or however you'd say it, most of those situations I wasn't even really in control of. Like, they kind of just happened. You know, things just kind of happen in life. Like, I didn't, like, go out and say, you know what, I'm 5 years old and in 13 years I want to graduate high school. Like, no, it just happened. Like, I was just told to go, right? It's kind of like the ocean. You kind of just get taken wherever it wants to take you. So is joy in my life just dependent on this kind of thing? Circumstances outside of my control, like being in the ocean? Or is joy in my life limited to just these few moments? Have my 10 years been spent trying to achieve just these few moments of joy, and are my next 10 years going to be the same? Is most of life just spent joylessly paddling out while waves crash on top of us, fighting for that moment when we can be happy again, fighting for that moment when we can achieve that high? And I think a lot of us actually live this way, right? Chasing a few moments, thinking that they'll provide our lives with joy. We chase moments maybe in the past where we experience joy, you know, like the good old days. Or we chase experiences in our future, like, you know, I'll experience joy when I finally make enough money, when I go on that trip, or when my team wins, like, I don't know, this championship, or whatever it is, when I date that perfect person. Are most of our lives spent joylessly struggling so we can achieve that high? Or does life's uncontrollable circumstances determine our joy? Because to me, that sounds pretty hopeless. Sounds pretty hopeless, because I don't want to live without joy in my life. I want to have joy all the time. What's wrong with joy? Why is it so hard to get all the time? How can our entire lives be joyful? Now, you probably know where I'm going with this. We all know that the feeling of catching a wave is just a moment of happiness. It's not the same thing as joy. You're right, it isn't. I think most of us know that joy and happiness, you know, they're similar in some ways, but they're two different things. I think we kind of know that, in our heads at least. Happiness, absolutely, it's a feeling we sometimes get. And joy, that's something that's meant to be something, you know, if we're a good enough person, we're meant to feel all the time, right? You know, we're meant to be joyful people filled with joy and joyous things, you know, especially being a Christian. Even in the worst circumstances of our lives, we're supposed to feel joy, aren't we? It's meant to be something we feel all the time. Well, I want to put something out there. I don't think so. I don't think so. And part of that statement is true. Joy is something that I think we can have all the time. But joy, and proper joy, I don't think proper joy is a feeling. I don't think it's a feeling. And here's why. So in life, our feelings change all the time, don't they? And some of this is due to ourselves and our own actions. And some of it, just like the ocean, is just out of our control. And I think that's just life. I think that's just life. Sometimes a wave crashes on you or dumps you. And sometimes you catch the perfect wave. Like, it's just seasonal. It changes. Sometimes we feel happy or sad, elation or grief. It can change day to day. I'm sure there were moments in this past decade where you unexpectedly had a really happy day, or you unexpectedly had just a really happy moment. Something happened, you know? And by the same token, there was probably a moment this past decade where life, you fell into grief. These are things that I think are temporary parts of our lives. But joy, and proper joy, isn't meant to be like this. It isn't meant to be seasonal. It isn't meant to be based on a random series of circumstances outside of our control. It isn't meant to be a feeling. It's meant to be something else. I think joy can be permanent. Why? Because I think joy can be a choice. I think joy can be a choice. Not a feeling, a choice. We can choose a life of joy. So what am I talking about and how can we choose it? Well, it's Christmas time, so let's get a little bit into the Christmas story of Christmas. But before, so we're not obviously going towards the actual nativity scene today. Just before that, actually. So verses today are from Luke chapter 1, and they start at verse 46. So if you do have your Bible or a device, crank that open, but I've got it on the screen as well. But it didn't actually come out very well, so it might be a little hard to read, so just warning for you. But a bit of context as to what these verses mean. We're going to look at the response that Mary made when an angel came to visit her. So 2,000 years ago, God sent an angel down to a young girl called Mary, who was living in Nazareth. Now, I want us to keep this in the front of our minds. Mary, yes, she's been portrayed as this figure in today's culture, but I really want to keep it in the forefront of our minds that she's just a normal girl at this point, right? And she's always just a normal person, but she's just a normal girl living 2,000 years ago. Now, Mary was due to be married to a lad called Joseph, and the angel came and told Mary that she would fall pregnant and give birth to a son, but she wouldn't fall pregnant due to the usual processes. It would be a miraculous birth. She would be the first virgin woman to give birth, right? So the angel continued and told her that her son would be the Messiah. Obviously, Mary would have known what the Messiah meant. So, you know, Messiah, the Jews believed that a Messiah would come and save them and all of God's people from the oppression of the world. And they had believed that for over 1,000 years. So Mary would have instantly understood what the angel was talking about. He was like, so she found out in that moment that she would basically be the mother of the ultimate savior of her people, of God's people. And this angel was telling Mary this, and it's great. Told these things and left. The thing is, the situation for Mary was actually now immediately a bit of a dangerous one. Because as some of us may know, Jewish culture, for better or for worse, was quite unforgiving of people who fell pregnant outside of marriage. So the angel had basically sent Mary the best, but yet worst news of her life. Because she would be shunned by her community. She'd be shunned by her family. She knew it. Life from that point on would become incredibly painful for the next few years. Now, she did think for a while that even maybe Joseph wouldn't marry her anymore. But luckily enough, the angel went and told Joseph what was going on. But the angel didn't tell everyone in town. She would, for the rest of her life, be known as a woman who brought shame to herself. So in knowing that, what does Mary say in response to all of this, to finding out all of this? Well, we start in verse 46. It says, "And Mary said, 'And my soul glorifies the Lord, and my spirit rejoices in God my Savior. For he has been mindful of the humble state of his servant. And from now on, all generations will call me blessed, for the Mighty One has done great things for me. Holy is his name.'" Let's get the next one. You can do it this way. "His mercy extends to those who fear him from generation to generation. He has performed mighty deeds with his arm. He has scattered those who are proud in their inmost thoughts. He has brought down rulers from their thrones, but he has lifted up the humble. He has filled the hungry with good things, and he has sent the rich away empty." She rejoices. She rejoices, despite knowing that the angel's news would mean that she would live with incredible shame for the rest of her life. She responds by rejoicing, by showing great joy. Why? Why does she respond this way? If I knew that I was going to get shunned by my community and my family, look, I probably wouldn't be too happy about that. Well, because joy wasn't based on a feeling of happiness for Mary. It was based on something else. The Bible Project video, or the Word one, we're going to watch that. So we've been going through a series of Bible Project videos these past couple of weeks. This is the third one. So this is basically presenting what the word joy means in the Bible better than I could. So yeah, let's play that.
Being in a good mood is really great, and most languages have lots of words to describe the experience, like happy, cheerful, joyful, and so on. The same goes for the languages of the Bible. In ancient biblical Hebrew, there's a variety of words, like simcha, sason, or gil. In the Greek New Testament, there's kara, euphrosune, or agaliasis. Each word has its own unique nuance, but they all basically refer to the feeling of joy and happiness. Now, what makes these biblical joy words interesting is noticing the kinds of things that bring happiness, and also seeing how joy is a key theme that runs through the whole story of the Bible. Let's start with sources of joy. On page one of the Bible, God says that this world is very good. And so naturally, people find joy in beautiful and good things of life, like growing flocks or an abundant harvest on the hills. The poet of Psalm 104 says a good bottle of wine is God's gift to bring joy to people's hearts. People find joy at a wedding or in their children. There's even a Hebrew proverb that compares the joy that perfume brings to your nose with the joy a good friend brings to you. The biblical story shows how we live in a world that's been corrupted by our own selfishness. It's marked by death and loss. And this is where biblical faith offers a unique perspective on joy. It's an attitude God's people adopt, not because of happy circumstances, but because of their hope in God's love and promise. So when the Israelites were suffering from slavery in Egypt, God raised up Moses to lead them into freedom. And the first thing the Israelites did was sing for joy. Even though they were in the middle of a desert, they were vulnerable, the promised land was still far away, they rejoiced anyway. Later biblical poets looked back on this story and they remembered how the Lord caused his people to leave with joy, his chosen ones with shouts of joy. This joy in the wilderness, this was a defining moment, a way of saying that the joy of God's people is not determined by their struggles, but by their future destiny. This theme appears later in Israel's story, when Israel suffered under the oppression of foreign empires. The prophet Isaiah looked for a day when God would raise up a new deliverer like Moses. That's when those redeemed by the Lord will return to Zion with glad shouts, with eternal joy crowning their heads. Happiness and joy will overtake them. And while the Israelites waited, they chose joy to anticipate their future redemption. This is why it's significant that when Jesus of Nazareth was born, it was announced as good news that brings great joy. We're told that Jesus announced the kingdom of God. He even taught his followers the same joy in the wilderness, saying, "When people reject you or persecute you for following me, rejoice, be very glad, because your reward is great in heaven." After his death and resurrection, Jesus commissioned his followers to go out and announce the good news that he was the risen king of the world. And as they did so, the early Christian communities were known for being full of joy, even when they were persecuted. Like when the Apostle Paul was sitting in a dirty Roman prison, he could say that he's chosen joy, even if he gets executed. He called this the joy of faith, or joy in the Lord. He believed it was the gift of God's Spirit, a sign that Jesus' presence is with you, inspiring hope in the midst of hardship. And when you believe that Jesus' love has overcome death itself, joy becomes reasonable in the darkest of circumstances. Now, this doesn't mean that you ignore or suppress your sorrow. That's not healthy or necessary. Paul often expressed his grief about missing loved ones or losing friends or his own freedom. He called it being full of sorrow and yet rejoicing. As he acknowledged his pain, he also made a choice to trust Jesus that his loss wouldn't be the final word. This is very different from the trite advice to turn that frown upside down. Christian joy is a profound decision of faith and hope in the power of Jesus' own life and love. And that's what biblical joy is all about.
Thanks, Kerry. So the Bible has a different definition of joy, one that isn't based on feelings, but rather a choice. The last line of the video says it like this. It says, "Christian joy is a profound decision of faith and hope in the power of Jesus and Jesus' own life and love." Put simply, it's this. Joy is a choice of faith in Jesus. It's a choice of faith in Jesus. Now, sure, joy can be used to describe feelings, but it itself is not a feeling. It's a continual decision, a choice that we're all handed every day, every moment of our lives, a choice. So that's why Mary responded by rejoicing. She had chosen her faith in God to be her joy. Because it's a choice, it also kind of follows that Jesus isn't the only thing you can choose to find your joy in. And that's true. But here's what I mean by this. If Mary wanted to base her joy in the opinions of others, she would be stuffed because they thought that she was an adulterer. But instead, she focused on God. She was convinced that her faith in God was more important than anything, even her own self-image, even her own pride. Yes, the shame would come. She would be wrongfully accused of breaking cultural norms. She would be cancelled, you know, how like we do to people online today. But her joy wasn't found in her culture. She had chosen faith in God to be her joy. In fact, she even calls herself blessed. She says, from now on, all generations will call me blessed. Where is it? Yep. From now on, all generations will call me blessed. Now, you notice that to Mary, blessing wasn't something God gives us something when he likes us or when we're good. One like equals one blessing or something like that. Or if I just do the right thing and I give a lot of money to charity or something like that, then God will flourish my money and I'll have more money than before. Or if I'm nice to this mean person, then God will make me very popular elsewhere. Or even the idea that because God likes us, that our lives will just somehow be perfect. Like everything will just be so perfect. I'm a Christian, so bad things will never happen to me because I have the blessing of God. And I think too many people are wrongfully taught this by Christians. That if they just accept Jesus' salvation, it'll mean immediate physical and material blessings in their life right now. Like somehow we control God. Like we use him like a vending machine. They put stuff in and get a blessing out. And the issue with this is that God never promises this type of blessing. Never does. And while, yes, sometimes he does give it, he does give immediate and physical blessings, the reasons he does so are completely outside of our comprehension. He's an infinite, all-knowing God outside of space and time. He's not doing it out of obligation because we've been good this year and because our names are on the nice list. He's not some cosmic Santa Claus giving out presents. If God does give an immediate blessing, that's fantastic. We should thank him for it. But if we don't see an immediate blessing, it's not because God doesn't like us anymore or because we haven't been good. Because an immediate physical blessing can sometimes be like catching the wave. There for a moment and then gone. And when our joy is based on such things, when we believe that God only works through such things, then when the joy of that thing is gone, then our joy in God will be gone as well. The reality is God has a bigger blessing for us, one that if we accept it, will mean that we'll never need anything else for all of eternity. The only blessing that Mary cared about was this. It says this in the verse prior, Luke 1:45. Blessed is she who has believed that the Lord will fulfill his promises to her. This is true blessing, to believe in God. To have faith in God. And you might think, hey, why is that a blessing to just believe in someone? Because our God has come through. Our God has come through. I love the fact that Bailey picked that song before. Our God is greater. Our God is stronger. That person that Mary was mother to, that person whose birth we celebrate on Christmas Day, He is the savior of man by sacrificing his own life. He defeated death itself when he rose to new life. That blessing that he offers us, if we have faith in him, is that we will share in this. We'll share in this new life. That we will rise with him. He offers this salvation to all of us. The video said it. If you believe that we share in the new life of Jesus, then anything that happens in this life, that's nothing compared to the blessing that God has given us. This blessing isn't there 1 minute and gone the next. It's for all of time. And having faith in this salvation means that no matter the circumstances in our life, we know our ultimate destiny. It's to be freed from oppression, free from bondage, free to experience the joy of life to the fullest with the God who is our joy. This is the good news of Jesus, the good news that brings great joy. So where will you choose to find your joy? In an eternity with Jesus, or in a few moments of happiness, catching a wave? I love how the video showed Paul's attitude to sufferings in life. Paul, an apostle of Jesus in the early years of the church. And in the book of Acts, you can read all about his experiences. They're absolutely incredible. As he traveled around the world and spread the good news of Jesus. Not everyone wanted to accept the gospel. Some actively try and oppose it. Paul's beaten. He's put in prison many times. And it caused him a lot of grief. And I love that the video didn't deny him his grief. It said, actually, no, it's okay. He experienced it and he talked about it. But he chose joy. And not just any joy, the joy of faith in Jesus to be the source of his life. And the amazing thing is that that joy spurred Paul on in many times of suffering. You know, he could have played the victim. He could have blamed God for everything that he was going through. But he instead had faith in that Jesus' salvation meant more than the loss of even his own life. Because he knew he had a future destiny with Jesus. And nothing could come in the way of that. I love how he said in Romans 5, we rejoice in our sufferings, knowing that our suffering produces endurance, and endurance produces character, and character produces hope, and hope does not put us to shame. Mary might have been put to shame by the people around her in her community, but hope in Jesus does not put us to shame. The hope that is the future destiny with Jesus. What happens when you choose to put your trust in the promises of Jesus instead of finding your joy elsewhere? Just like Paul here, you endure. You endure through life. All of a sudden, paddling out there doesn't become such a task. You don't give that joy up, that joy of hope up for anything because you know the truth. And the truth has set you free. When life circumstances, like waves, crash on top of us, we can still choose joy. But I really want to emphasize here that, you know, I think our world a lot is trying to pivot us into finding joy in things other than Jesus. And so I really want to emphasize that as much as I possibly can. Our joy is hope in who Jesus is and what he's done. Our joy is loving others like he loved us. Our joy is a choice of faith in him because he's trustworthy. He saved us. So our joy isn't dependent on what our situation is, but who Jesus is. And that's why Mary went on to speak about how amazing God is. It's all right, I'll leave it. She says that God is a mercy giver, that he feeds the hungry. He lifts up the humble in our world. He helps his people when they call and he fulfills his promises to them. Our joy is a choice of faith in Jesus, in who he is and what he's done. Now, I don't know what situation you're coming from. I don't know your life circumstance. But yeah, I think the narrative the world is trying to sell us is that we need to find joy in and of ourselves. Like, we can save ourselves somehow. I just need to get back to loving myself more. I need to have more me time, focus on me. I think our culture kind of does this over Christmas. It's like, okay, you know what? Let's forget all our responsibilities. We've run really hard over this past year. So you know what? It's me time. We want to be our own sources of joy. The thing is, we sit in the middle of the biggest mental health crisis the world's ever seen. If we make ourselves our source of joy, then we're joyful. Always looking inward, thinking of ourselves, and at the end of it all, we're going to die with no hope. I don't know anybody who has been able to resurrect themselves except for one person. We can't save ourselves from death, but we can find joy in the one who has defeated death. So we need to decide if we truly believe in Jesus. We need to decide if we truly believe in Jesus, because if we knowingly can't rejoice in any situation, despite knowing what Jesus has done and who he is, then we've got to ask ourselves, do we truly know him and what he's done for us? And you know, that's a harsh thing to say. No one likes to think, oh, I know Jesus. I've known him for years. It's a harsh thing to say. And it was really harsh for me to write down on this iPad because I didn't want to think about it. I feel like I'm a good Christian. But it's true. If I honestly can't rejoice in who Jesus is and what he's done through every moment of my life, if I can't choose joy in Jesus through it all, then I truly know the effect of what he's done. Do I truly understand it? Because what he's done is far greater than that situation. No matter what it is, do we truly believe him? I honestly believe the life lived in faith is a life of joy. But without it, we're just stranded in the ocean. Joy is a choice of faith in Jesus. And you know, a great way to live this out, we did it a little bit before, with Jace, but it's just through thankfulness and gratitude. Thankfulness and gratitude. Being actively and intentionally thankful for who God is and what he's done for us. You know, when we appreciate someone or something, we talk about it, we thank them, we show them gratitude, we tell them we appreciate them as a person. And that's what Mary did in these verses. If we really want to experience joy through faith all the time, then I encourage all of us, let's build our lives around intentional thankfulness to thank Jesus for who he is, what he's done, and what he's doing as well. You know, some people keep a gratitude journal. Some people pray every morning. And I've taken up a little bit of a thing. Hopefully it continues on because that's always the struggle with all these things. But I'm trying to make sure that each one of my prayers starts out with a thank you instead of a request for a need. Just because it just reminds me that, you know what, as great as that need may be, what Jesus has done for me is still greater than that. So it comes first. Jesus is still my salvation. It's not just being thankful for the sake of it. It's being thankful specifically to Jesus. Now, to finish off today, I want to kind of show a bit of an example of thankfulness, but also use it as a bit of an opportunity for each one of us to just reflect in our lives. Now, many of us would know that Kanye West took the world by storm this year when he released an album called Jesus is King. Now, bear with me. I know it's a very typical Abe thing to do, to chuck a rapper at the end of his sermon, right? But I literally could not resist. This is like first time a big rapper's done a Christian album, so I'm very excited. Now, on this album, there's a song called God Is, and I'll play it for us in a second. But you'll see that in the song, the lyrics will be on the screen. That Kanye, and put your opinions on Kanye just to the side for a second. I know he's a very controversial person. But in the song, he's just purely thanking God for who he is and what he's done. That's all it is. That's all the lyrics. And when I was reading some like secular critics kind of criticize the song a little bit, most people didn't mind the fact that it was Christian. What their biggest issue with it was that it focused too much on God and not enough on Kanye's personal journey, right? Because they wanted to know, you know, what he's been through and all that kind of stuff, right? But to me, that's not the point of the song. That's not the point of the song. If they'd stepped back for a second, they would have seen that what Kanye was doing was trying to take the focus off of himself, which is a very un-Kanye thing like to do, and actually put it on God. The song is meant to be focused on God. That's what I'm trying to say here really today. Just focus your gratitude on him and joy will naturally flow into your life. So as this song plays, and maybe after it, we're going to play Joy of the World, but I actually think maybe Our God Again. Is that all right, Bailey? Yeah, because I think that was just really good before. As the song plays, just take that time to reflect. There's two big questions, you know. If we honestly can't say that we can be joyful in all of our lives, every aspect, every circumstance, reflect, do I truly understand what he's done for me? And the other thing is, where can I be thankful? What can I be thankful for? Where can I focus on him more over this next little time as we all take a big breath in and breath out, go on holidays, all that kind of stuff? Where can I take the focus off of me and look at the amazing God who saved this world? So let's play the song.